Welcome to this deep dive. We're diving into the world of Aristotle. Specifically, we're going to be looking at Book 7 of Metaphysics. And this is a text that really grapples with a question that maybe you've even asked yourself. What makes something what it is? Like, what is its essence? We're going beyond just appearances and just qualities to explore Aristotle's concept of substance.
And it's more than just an academic exercise. Aristotle really truly believed that understanding substance was the key to understanding pretty much everything else.
It's like the foundation.
Absolutely.
So, okay, before we even like crack open this book, I have to ask, how many times have you like looked at a tree and thought, what is the essence of this treeness? Maybe not in those exact words, but you've had that
Oh,
feeling.
I think it's a very common human experience. And Aristotle really nails it right out of the gate. He says, describing a man as good or 3 cubits long doesn't actually tell us what a man is. Those are just traits, not the core of his being.
Okay, so substance is like the bedrock, the treeness beneath the leaves, the humanness under all our quirks. Is
Exactly.
that what we're getting at?
It's not just a list of qualities, but the underlying reality that makes those qualities possible. That's his whole point.
And this is where Aristotle's love of systems comes in. He doesn't just like throw out this idea of substance. He meticulously ranks it as first in several ways. Like in definition, you need to know the substance to even define a thing. In knowledge. Knowing what something is trumps knowing like its features. And get this in time, like substance has to exist before its properties can even come about.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Whoa.
Because what he's saying there is grasping the essence of something is the most fundamental knowledge you can have. It's like having the blueprint before you even see the building.
Oh, I like that. Okay, but hold on. Doesn't that make like abstract things less real? Like, is Aristotle saying my idea for a novel is less substantial than my laptop?
That's where the debate gets really juicy. Not everyone agreed that physical objects were the prime examples of substance. Plato, for instance, thought eternal concepts like beauty or mathematical truths were more real than the stuff we see and touch.
So it's like a battle royale, team tangible versus team abstract fighting for the most real title.
And there are other contenders too.
What?
Aristotle even brings up Speusippus,
Usippus,
who imagines substance in levels, like a pyramid, and
Whoa.
at the very top, the
Whoa.
one, this ultimate unity. And then you get numbers and spatial stuff and souls, and finally at the bottom are good old physical objects.
Levels of reality. Okay, my brain is officially doing backflips. But this is good, right? It's making us question what we find most convincing. Is it the idea of justice or is it this chair I'm sitting on?
Precisely, that's Aristotle's gift. He forces us to confront these questions head on.
Okay, back to Aristotle himself. He wouldn't leave us hanging with just this vague idea of substance, would he? Does he break it down further?
Oh, he does. And this is where it gets really practical. He says every substance has three key ingredients: matter, form, and the compound of the two.
Okay, let's bake this cake. What's the matter?
Think of it as the raw material, the bronze of a statue, the wood of a table, the ingredients of your cake. That's the matter. It's the stuff.
Got it. And the form, this is where it gets kind of tricky, right?
Form is the whatness. It's the shape, the structure, the essence that makes that bronze into a statue and not just a lump. It's what makes that collection of wood into a table with a purpose.
So the form gives the matter its identity,
You got
its
it.
function, its
Yes,
tableness, the
exactly.
soupy.
And the compound is simply the two together. The actual existing thing with both its material and its defining essence.
Okay, but wait, why does he say form is more fundamental than matter? Doesn't the Brahmans like have to exist first for the sculptor to even do anything?
That's where Aristotle gets deep. He says, sure, matter is necessary for a thing to exist.
But the form is what determines what that thing is. Think of it this way, that bronze could be shaped into a million things, but the form of statue makes it a statue and not a doorknob.
Oh, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it now. This reminds me of that example he uses, the cloak thing. Why isn't a white cloak a good definition of substance?
Because white is just a surface level trait. The essence of a cloak is its form, that it's a garment meant to protect you from the elements. The color could change, the fabric could change,
Whoa.
but the cloakness remains.
That's subtle. But so important. It's like saying human being versus like tall, dark-haired human being.
Right.
One gets at the essence, the other is just window dressing.
Exactly. And this idea of form is the core of substance. It ripples out into everything else he talks about.
Mm.
It really does. And what I find so compelling about Aristotle is he takes these seemingly abstract ideas
mm-hmm.
and makes them work in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, he's not content to just say form is important. He wants to show you exactly how it operates.
It's true. He's not just building castles in the sky. He's giving us the blueprints to build our own understanding. Speaking of blueprints, didn't we touch on the idea that some philosophers believed in substances that exist outside the physical world, like Crato's forms? Does Aristotle address those?
He absolutely does, and he doesn't hold back. He presents some seriously strong arguments against those separate forms existing.
Ooh, this is where the philosophical gloves come off. Lay it on me.
Aristotle was a master debater. One of his main points against the forms is their relationship or lack thereof with the things they supposedly represent. Think about it, if there's a perfect form of man hanging out in some abstract realm, how does that actually connect to the real flesh and blood men we see walking around?
Yeah, good point. It's like, is this form sending out vibes, telepathically shaping each guy? How does it actually work?
That's the problem Aristotle highlights. It's not clear how a separate form would have any influence. And this leads to another issue. If those forms are meant to be the cause of things in our world, wouldn't that mean they're constantly acting on things? But how can something totally removed from the physical world actually have a physical effect?
It's like trying to win a marathon by just thinking really hard about running. You gotta have your feet on the ground actually putting in the work.
Perfect analogy. That's why Aristotle sees separate forms as unnecessary complications. He thinks we can explain everything we need to about substance and change by looking at how matter and form interact right here in the physical world.
It makes him seem so down to earth, even when talking about these huge concepts. He's looking for answers that hold up in reality.
He is. He's not dismissing abstract ideas entirely. He just doesn't see them as existing in some separate dimension.
So they're more like blueprints we create in our minds, not some cosmic originals. I can dig that. Okay, back to Aristotle's view of substance. He talks about how things come to be through the interplay of matter and form. But does he ever talk about how things stop being? Like destruction?
He does, and this is where the difference between concrete substances and their formulas becomes crucial.
Okay, quick refresh. What's the distinction again? It's been a wild ride so far.
Think about your pet dog. That specific individual dog is a concrete substance.
Okay.
It has both the matter, its body, and the form. The essence of dogness.
Got it. So my pup is one specific instance of dog out of millions, but the formula.
That's the dogness itself. The universal concept of what makes a dog and not a cat. It exists beyond any single individual dog.
So it's like the blueprint, the list of essential dog traits. How does destruction fit into this?
Well, Aristotle says concrete substances like your dog, sadly, can be destroyed because they were generated. They came into being. They have a beginning and an end in time.
Ah, thinking about my pup passing away makes this hit home. But what about the formula of dog? Does that disappear too when individual dogs die?
Here's the cool part. Aristotle says the formula can't be destroyed because it never came into being in that same way. Dogness is a universal. It doesn't have a start or finish date, it just is.
Mind blown. So my dog's life doesn't erase the concept of dog from the universe. Makes you think about legacies, huh?
Absolutely. And this affects how we define things. Aristotle argues that you can't truly define those individual perishable things the same way you define a universal concept.
Why is that? Don't they both have an essence?
Individual things are always in flux.
Right.
Their matter is constantly changing. By the time you finish defining your dog perfectly, they'd have already changed a little bit.
So true. While I'm trying to nail down its dogness, it's busy sniffing, wagging, living its best doggy life.
Exactly. We can have a general grasp of your dog as a dog. But a truly precise, unchanging definition of that specific individual, practically impossible.
It's like trying to define a river. You can point and say that's the Mississippi, but it's always flowing, shifting.
That's the point. And this is why Aristotle says we can have true scientific knowledge, he calls it episteme, about universals, but not about individuals. Our understanding of individuals is always going to be limited, open to change.
So I can know dogness in general, but knowing my specific dog is always going to be a work in progress. Deep.
That's the beauty of it. This leads to another interesting point about defining those forms we were talking about earlier. Aristotle argues you can't even truly define them in the way Plato thought you could.
Wait, really? I thought forms were supposed to be those perfect eternal blueprints that could be defined.
That was Plato's idea. But Aristotle points out that any definition has to be made of words, and words are always general. They apply to multiple things, not just one perfect thing.
Okay, I'm following so far.
So imagine defining the form of beauty. You'll end up using words that apply to lots of beautiful things, not just that one singular form.
Like I might say harmony, proportion, glow. Those apply to tons of beautiful things, not just some ultimate beauty concept.
Exactly. Your definition ends up way too broad. That's why Aristotle thinks defining forms is a flawed project. They're meant to be singular, but language just can't capture that.
It's like trying to bottle up sunlight. You can experience it, but you can't contain its essence.
What a poetic way to put it. That's the heart of Aristotle's critique. He thinks forms are too removed from the real world, from the messy, changing reality we actually live in.
So if most things can't be defined precisely scientifically, what can we know for sure, according to Aristotle?
He doesn't think we're completely lost. Remember, he believes in those two kinds of substance, the concrete ones and the formulas. While we can't have perfect knowledge of individuals, we can know those formulas, those universal concepts.
So back to my dog. I can know dogness even if I can't perfectly define my furry pal.
You got it. And this knowledge of the formulas of the essence of things is what helps us understand the world, make sense of change, even create new things.
Okay, that's actually pretty hopeful. It's like we can't grasp the entire universe, but we can understand its basic building blocks.
Right. And that knowledge isn't just theoretical. For Aristotle, it's practical. It helps us act in the world, make choices, live meaningful lives.
I love that. It's like he's saying, the world's complex, things change. But that doesn't mean knowledge is impossible. We can still find firm footing.
Beautifully said. And that's why his philosophy is still so relevant today, even after all these centuries.
We could seriously do a whole series of deep dives on metaphysics alone. There's just so much to uncover.
I agree. And I wouldn't be surprised if Book 7 has a few more surprises in store for us before we're done.
Let's take a moment to recap the main points we've covered so far. We began with Aristotle's substance. The core of what makes a thing what it is, not just its superficial qualities.
And we talked about his hierarchy, where substance is first in definition, knowledge, and even time. It has to exist before its properties can even come about.
Then we got into the battle of what counts as substance, Plato's forms, Speusippus's levels, and Aristotle's grounded view.
We dove into Aristotle's breakdown of substance into matter form, and their compound focusing on how form gives things their true identity.
And who could forget the snub nose puzzle? That got us thinking about the limits of defining things and separating essential traits from accidental ones.
We explored Aristotle's arguments against separate forms. Seeing how he believed the interplay of matter and form right here in our world is enough to explain substance and change.
And lastly, we tackled how Aristotle applies substance to how things come to be and pass away the difference between concrete substances, perishable, and their formulas or essences, eternal.
What a journey. And you're right, there's even more to explore in Book 7. But for now, let's shift gears and see how these profound ideas about substance can be applied to our own lives.
I don't know about you, but after that whirlwind tour of substance, I'm ready to bring it all back down to earth. Like, how do these big ideas actually affect us, you know, in our everyday lives?
Yeah, you're right. It's easy to get lost in the philosophical weeds. But one of the most powerful takeaways from Aristotle's substance, I think, is how it connects to the idea of purpose.
Purpose. Okay, now you're speaking my language. It feels like everyone's always on the hunt for their purpose these days. What's Aristotle's take on it?
He doesn't give us a step-by-step guide, but his ideas about substance offer a really insightful framework.
Right.
Remember, he argues that everything has an essence.
Right.
A form that makes it what it is.
Right. And that form isn't just a random hodgepodge of traits. It's tied to the thing's function. Its reason for being. Like we said before, a cloak's essence isn't just its color or fabric. It's about its purpose to protect us from the elements.
Exactly. Aristotle extends this idea to all of nature. He believes everything. A tiny seed, a soaring eagle, even a rock has a built-in purpose. A telos.
Okay.
That's guiding its development and actions.
So it's like saying everything from the smallest blade of grass to the vastest galaxy is driven to become what it's meant to be. That's a pretty profound thought.
It is. And while Aristotle focuses on the natural world, his ideas about purpose can definitely be applied to us humans, too.
Okay, so does that mean we're all born with some predetermined purpose? Like, it's already decided what we're meant to do?
Mm-hmm. Not quite that rigid. Aristotle doesn't think our purpose is some fixed program we're just unpacking. He believes it's something we cultivate over time through our choices and actions.
So it's more like we're born with potential. And it's up to us to shape that potential into a purpose by living, making choices, figuring things out.
Precisely. He believed our purpose is deeply connected to our ability to think, to reason, and most importantly, to make choices.
I love that. It's empowering. Like, he's saying we're not just passive passengers in life, we're the drivers. Hmm. We get to steer, and those choices shape who we become.
What a great way to put it. This ties back to his idea of the soul being the form of the body.
Okay.
The soul for Aristotle isn't some ghostly thing.
Right.
It's the principle of life, the force that makes us act and be who we are.
So our soul, our essence, is what pushes us to make those choices that ultimately reveal our purpose. It's like an ongoing process of self-discovery.
Exactly. And according to Aristotle, the ultimate purpose of human life is to live in accordance with reason and virtue. That's what allows us to truly flourish, to become the best versions of ourselves.
Okay, so it's not just about finding any purpose. It's about aligning our actions with what's good, what's rational. It's like aiming for purpose with a moral compass.
You got it.
Right.
And Aristotle believed living virtuously wasn't just some lofty ideal. Yeah. It was something we built through practice habit, doing the right thing over and over.
Like learning an instrument.
Yeah.
You don't become a concert pianist overnight. You got to practice those scales, build those musical muscles, and keep striving to get better.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Same goes for living a virtuous life.
Mm-hmm.
It's about those daily choices, mm-hmm. big and small, that align with what's good, what's rational.
That's actually really inspiring. It's like Aristotle's giving us the tools to not just understand our purpose, but to actually live it moment by moment, choice by choice.
Exactly. And this brings us back to one of the big themes we've been exploring, that philosophy isn't just an intellectual game. It's about understanding ourselves and the world so we can live more fulfilling, meaningful lives.
Wow, what a journey. And to think we've only just dipped our toes into Aristotle's ocean of thought on substance. It makes you want to dive back into Book 7 and see what other treasures we missed.
There's always something new to uncover. And that's the beauty of engaging with these great thinkers.
Speaking of uncovering things, I believe you have one final thought-provoking question to leave our listeners with, something to ponder as they continue their own exploration of Aristotle.
If Aristotle is right, and substance with its inherent form and purpose underlies everything, does that mean everything has a purpose? If so, what could that purpose be, and how might we discover it not just for ourselves, but for the world around us?
That's a question that could keep us talking for days. It makes you look at the world with fresh eyes, wondering about the hidden purpose in every object, every event, every encounter.
Keep those questions alive, and I encourage you to keep exploring Aristotle's work. You might be surprised how much his ancient wisdom resonates with the questions we face today.
Couldn't agree more. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Aristotle's concept of substance. I hope you've enjoyed the journey as much as we have. Until next time, keep asking those big questions, keep seeking out knowledge, and keep discovering the richness and wonder that philosophy can bring to your life.